Welcome to the Motoring Podcast, your weekly discussion of motoring news. This is episode 90 on a Tuesday, the 7th of February, 2017. Hello, I'm Alan.
Hello, I'm Andrew.
90!
I know!
We're only 10 away.
I know.
That's a bit scary, actually.
I know, you'd have thought that if we knew we were getting up to being only 10 away, we might have arranged something special, but we haven't.
Oh, well, so. Yeah, didn't even realise.
Yeah.
And yes, we can count.
Yes. What a good day. Even when it goes beyond the number of fingers and toes. And I'm not from Norfolk, so it's the usual numbers. Anyway, shall I stop alienating our listeners?
Yes. It's well done for making it in the first 30 seconds, but, well, you know, congratulations. I like to see that you now work at getting this out the way early on in a show.
Yeah. It means people who get offended don't have to waste time listening to the rest of it.
All right, well, I'll crack on then with some follow-up.
Please.
Dieselgate.
Mm-hmm.
Dieselgate America. 3-litre diesels now. There's been agreements. Now, the first of these agreements is that Volkswagen is going to pay initially in the region of $1.26 billion in fines whilst fixing about 80,000 cars. And offering to buy back these. And this is on one of the versions of the 3-litre diesels. Then,
yes.
There is also a problem of ones they cannot fix, that they could then face further fines in the region of $4.04 billion for failing to fix. If they can't reach agreement with the regulators on a fix for, I think this is the older ones, the Mark 1 3-litre TDIs, which I think is from 2009 to 2012. So that will...
I'm going to nod and smile because I'm not sure.
So that then absolutely creams through the $19 billion that was set aside, because we were already past that at $21 billion. So if this all goes wahoony shaped, we're now, you know, $26 billion worth.
I think it's already gone quite wahoony shaped, to be honest.
Yeah, but I mean, if the next one, if they have that extra $4 billion, fine.
Can you remember, off the top of your head, if that's all of them now? So it's the two flavours of 3-litre plus the 2-litre diesels.
That should be everything in America. As far as engines and the customers and buybacks and fixes, there's still all the other mess to do with fraud, criminal cases, compensation for what they've done to the environment. All that sort of stuff is still faffing around from various states as well as the US government. So we've yet to hear, that's just chugging away, but this could be a big line for Volkswagen. This could allow them to move forward, which they're desperately trying to do, looking at all the electrifiedness that they talk about now.
Electrified concepts. Okay, so that's big good news good news. That is a form of settlement. In the US, but it's not going quite so well in Germany right at the moment. You'll remember in the last class of German, not done a law degree, so I can't even...
Well, it was the German legal system with respect to class action suits and how they did not happen. And there is a test later, because we hope you did your homework.
Yes, quite. Well, I've been failing miserably so far. But you will remember when we've talked about German class action lawsuits before, and this is what I was trying to introduce in a very bad way, that you can't have a class action lawsuit in Germany. Each of the plaintiffs has to come forward individually, which, when people have bought one or two cars, means lots and lots of time, not suits. However, if one entity has purchased about 500 vehicles and they decide that they want to sue Volkswagen for misrepresentation, then that's significantly more serious. And that's exactly what the German fish distribution company Deutsche See is doing. It is suing Volkswagen for wrongly, it says, claiming that its cars were environmentally friendly. Managing director of Deutsche See, Egbert Maybach, said, "We are deeply disappointed with Volkswagen and feel we've been deceived, as the jointly envisaged partnership in the area of environmentally friendly mobility was only adhered to by our side." So yes, that's going to get quite bad, and that's going to get, that looks like Deutsche See. They'd been attempting to settle out of court, but hadn't managed. And the resulting court case is for €11.9 million. That's about £10.3 million. So again, it's not in the billions like the American, like in America, but
it's a biggie considering that
they
can only go one at a time.
Hmm. Exactly.
I think we'll see more of those.
I think we will. Yes. There was more emissions news this afternoon, actually, which is very, very, very recent.
Yes, hot off the press for us. That's our hot off the press music. No expense spent. And this is one I saw that was on Twitter, actually. It's from Reuters. And that, if you remember, FCA were being investigated to do with their diesels in the EU not complying with the tests and the regimes, and they were chucking out, or it was reported they were chucking out more than was acceptable of nitrogen oxides. France was investigating. Mm-hmm. Germany was demanding that FCA be charged. But the thing that caught my eye was that the Italian diesel probe has omitted key tests for FCA models, as they said in their own report. Which seems, wow. Yeah, we didn't check these bits, and we've said we haven't checked these bits, but it's all fine.
What I thought was interesting about those tests that had been missed out was that they're the tests that are put in there to basically catch out and check that there are no cheat devices.
Mm.
So there's a couple of tests, one of which is that they run the NEDC test backwards. And there is, I've lost it now. And there were another couple of other tests, one of which is a bit more aggressive. For example, it's not the test, but it's looking at there's a correlation between how the actual test run, that NEDC test run, and the results that come from it, and from these other tests, which aren't the absolute test, but they're a cross check that companies and that countries and the testing agencies are meant to run in order to just double check there's no specific cheat devices in there, and those are the ones that seem to have been missed out. But that one's still developing, so we'll see what happens.
But this adds power to the argument that's coming from the EU that the member states shouldn't be keeping control of. Mm-hmm. Pursuing any wrongdoing on this front, because as we know, there's certain committees that are jumping up and down saying all this has happened, and not one country has charged Volkswagen with breaking anything. So I think it just like I said, it adds more power to it, and I think it becomes more likely that it's going to be centrally governed.
Mm-hmm.
Centrally regulated.
Which I don't think is a bad thing.
Yeah, I mean, it could be done. It could be right. It could be, but we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah. So that one, I'm sure, will evolve a bit more.
But back in this country, though, Alan.
Back in this country, and gosh, there is actually more follow up than I thought this tonight. I'm going to read this one out because it is the best headline of the week. And it is that General Motors gets burned by MPs over Vauxhall Zafira fires recall.
Well done, Andrew Brady. Congratulations.
Yes, well done, Andrew Brady of Motoring Research.
Congratulations on that one. We applaud, we doff caps.
Yes.
Excellent work.
Yes. Right. Basically, the transport committee were still following up on these Zafira B fires that happened before, and just speaking to people, to representatives of General Motors, so not just of Vauxhall, but of General Motors, General Motors Europe. And it seems that it didn't go particularly well when the committee chair, Louise Elman MP, was asking questions about how many fires in the Zafira Model Bs were you aware of. General Motors, it seems, were less... seemed slightly surprised by the question.
This was the opening question.
That was the opening question, and...
They struggled.
GM's VP of Quality was... Director of Global Safety and Field Investigations asked fires. So yes, it's I'm not quite sure how well this went, really. So
we've not been very complimentary on this podcast to the Transport Committee in the past.
No, they've been a bit prick. They can be lame when they want to be lame, can't they?
They sometimes show a crass lack of understanding of what transport is and cars and things like that, when you would hope that these select few people would actually have done some homework. But in this case, it looks like we didn't need to get into any really tricky areas, and this has not gone well for General Motors / Vauxhall.
There was, and we were discussing this before we pressed the record buttons, but there is quite an interesting thing that's come out of this, and that Vauxhall and General Motors have called for the creation of a national vehicle fire database, so that there is actually a database of vehicle fires which insurance companies and manufacturers can contribute to, so that the manufacturers can diagnose issues much more quickly. Because that, Vauxhall had been said in the past, and we've talked about this before a couple of months ago, that actually it was very difficult for Vauxhall to try and work out what had happened to start with, because it didn't have access to the vehicles and it didn't have access to all the reports. So they would like a database so that manufacturers in the future can investigate much more quickly and can correlate data from many places much more easily than having to basically go to each insurance company and ask what they think. And that's the Vauxhall side. Now, the more cynical amongst us
Hi.
May say that Vauxhall... Can you hear me, Andrew? may say that what Vauxhall would actually like is a database of all the vehicle fires, so that when it comes to it, if there are issues in the future, they can go, but look, everybody else's vehicles catch fire too. It's not just us. It's not just the Zafira and the Corsa. It's everyone else. Everyone else too. We're no worse than the rest.
Yeah, I'm added to that. This was announced the night before they were going in to see the committee. So
yeah,
the timing was very poor. If you're going to be, if you're going to give them any slack, of which at this point now I'm not, but if you were going to give them any slack, you'd say that the timing is poor, that they should have announced that a while ago and should have been drumming that up rather than the night before, because then it just looks like it's smoke and mirrors. Please don't ask us difficult questions like how many have caught fire. And then we'll move up to tricky ones like how many have we tried to get hold of, which they seemingly couldn't answer.
There is an interesting point here, by the way. If you are interested in buying a Zafira B, so 166,000 UK registered Zafira Bs have had their second and final fix. Okay, the second recall. There are still 55,000 out and about there which haven't had the work done, despite owners, according to this spokesman's statement, despite owners receiving up to 7 letters Okay, so that includes thousands of vehicles that are MOT and thousands more which have been, in inverted commas, sold to trade. So, yeah, that's just be aware if you are interested in the Zafira B, and there are many reasons that you might be interested in the Zafira B. Well, they're cheap. So, just be careful and just double check that it has had the recall work done. Please.
Yes.
I don't think any listeners to this podcast will actually be interested in Zafira Bs, but they might know someone who has one.
Yes.
There was one last piece of follow-up.
Yes.
And it was kind of Brexity related.
It is a Brexity one. If you remember, upon the announcement of the referendum results, the Ford said that their Bridgend plant needed, they were going to now reconsider their investment and not invest as much in it as they were previously because economics, etc., etc. So, in a, I think, bold move by the union, they have given Ford management a 2-week ultimatum to produce a 5-year plan for the engine factory in Bridgend, which I would congratulate the Unite Union for their bravery.
Courageous move, I think, is the term. Yes, Minister Tom.
Yes, and not in an Apple way. Because you don't push them to make an easy decision then. Because how can you make a 5-year plan when we still don't know what's going to happen?
Yeah.
I think it's an attempt at a clever political move, but I think it's an incredibly stupid move. And if now Ford leave or mothball vast swathes of that plant, that union need to look at themselves for that.
Yeah. And the thing is that in the past, when unions have tried to strong arm Ford, in the 1970s, in the 1980s, then, as I've said before, Ford have basically said, well, actually, we're not interested in entertaining you. We'll go somewhere else in Europe where we don't have these issues. And that's why there aren't any Ford cars built in the UK anymore. And I think that Ford is a big enough organisation that it doesn't need to build any vehicles in the UK. And well, it doesn't probably need to build petrol engines in the UK.
Who is regularly at number one in the car selling list that we go in once a month?
Yeah.
And it makes no difference whatsoever. Nobody in this country now cares where the car was built.
No, totally.
I don't think that matters. I don't think it matters to anybody in this country, really.
No, exactly. And Ford, of course, Ford, like General Motors, and like any of the big car companies, are well known for caring about these kind of things and caring about what people think, because they know that in 3, 4, 5 years' time, people are going to have forgotten and they're going to have moved on. I don't think it's good that Unite are trying to do something like that rather than trying to come up and ask for a 5-year plan rather than saying they're going to have a walkout or whatever else. I think that hopefully it won't come to that. But I think that if they do that, they're incredibly naive. But what do I know?
Well, considering car companies are already saying about how much money they've lost due to just the pound fluctuations,
mm-hmm.
to then get stroppy and say, give us a 5-year plan when we've got no idea what's going to happen, really. I mean, we've got some pretty good ideas.
Yes.
If you listen to experts, if anybody still does anymore. To do this, I think, is very ill-judged.
I agree completely. Yes. Yes.
Anyway,
should we move on and talk about something you've just teased?
I know.
Yeah, so it's that time of the month again, folks. So cue up the sign the swinging symbol, because here we are. It's the SMMT new car registrations. Woo!
Yay!
Our first of 2017 numbers, so let's see just what happened. So the headline numbers are that 174,564 new cars were registered in the UK in January, which is a rise of 2.9%, and it's up and almost equal to the highest... it isn't almost equal to 2005. It is the highest level since 2005. Good news for me and my crazy prediction at the start of the year. Alternatively, fuel vehicle market share is over 4% for the first time ever, with registrations up by a fifth year on year, which I think is quite impressive.
If that carries on for the rest of the year, then I mean, you're going to smash this, your prediction.
Well, I do hope so. It was such a ludicrous prediction at the time. But it looks like it. If this continues, we should be...
Well, if the rumour that it seems to be gathering more and more momentum of diesel scrappage happens,
yeah.
I think you're in for... I think you're going to be very close at that point.
Yeah, I think it'll be close enough that it's a nearly. Yeah. Private motorists led the growth in January, registering 76,729 new cars, which is up 5%. Fleet demand was marginal at 1.4%, whereas business registrations fell by 0.1%. Business registrations have not been doing so brilliantly lately.
Yeah.
Should we run through the best sellers?
Yes.
First, and then we shall do the winners and losers overall, but this will give us a little bit of a flavour of where that's going. No point in going through year-to-date figures.
Why don't we be super efficient and do year-to-date and January?
You mean at the same time?
Yes, that's how good you're going to be about
this. This is a once-in-12-months-only offer, folks. So number one, this will be a surprise to absolutely nobody, is the Ford Fiesta with 8,495 cars registered. Number two is the Volkswagen Golf with 5,455. Yep, that is just over 3,000 cars between first and second places in the list. It compresses a bit more now. Ford Focus at number three, the Mercedes-Benz C-Class at number four, and the Vauxhall Astra at number five, which has 4,065 cars sold. Number six is the Nissan Juke, which is the top British-built car on the list this month. Seven is the Vauxhall Corsa. Eight is the Nissan Qashqai. Ninth is the Audi A3 with 3,118 sold. And 10th in with just under a third. That's rubbish. 10th, surprisingly. Let's move on from that mathematical dog mess that was about to take place, is the surprising Kia Sportage with 3,063 registered in January, which is quite impressive. Which brings a... Well, it's not... I think the biggest surprise there was the Sportage, to be honest.
Well, I think the C-Class has been so high.
C-Class is awfully high. Yeah. The numbers are not that high, really, relative to other months. Of course, January is lower than others. And remember, this is January to, you know, this is comparing January a year past. So it's quite easy to have for these jumps to have taken place.
Mm-hmm. Right, so we're going to move on to winners and losers.
Go for it. Should we start with losers and get that out of the way? Yeah.
Okay.
So there is... We can do a triple of losers to begin with, which it all basically come under PSA, because Citroën and DS are both down by about a third. Peugeot down by 18.6% percent on the numbers from last year, which is just not great. In any way, shape, or form.
No.
So, yeah.
Well, hopefully for Citroën, the C3 will kick in.
Yeah.
DS needs something.
I know, they need a new, they need something new in the model range there.
And the Peugeot 3008 and 5008 will hopefully start to kick in for them.
Yeah.
I mean, the 3008 gets...
Yeah, but
gets,
I don't think that's registration. It does. It does. I don't think the sales of the kit sales and registrations have kicked in properly yet, though, for those.
Mm.
I think they'll need the fleet to come through on that. Who else? Lexus are down 20%. Mazda are down 33%.
Ooh.
34. 30. Well, oh yes, okay, 34%. Pardon me. Porsche down 17, and Vauxhall are down 9. Those are the big drops. Subaru are down 14 as well. And MG are down 34, but that's only over a couple hundred cars.
Yeah.
It doesn't quite count the same way.
So I didn't include it. There are some winners, as there must
there
be.
There are definitely winners.
I'll start at the top. Aston Martin. Yeah. Okay, it's not a vast amount, but the percentage is impressive. 174%.
Having just ridiculed MG, who sold three times as many cars. But yes, 174% is amazing.
So that's up from 69 cars last year to 189.
That'll be all the DB11s.
Yes, so considering how much their cars cost, and hopefully there's a healthy profit margin in that, that will be all right. A bit of a surprise for me was Dacia. Nearly 20% to just a smidgen under 2,000 cars, up from 1,600.
But they've got the new Sandero, haven't they, that's come through?
Mm.
The facelifted Sandero. So that's probably helping there. There was probably a bit of a gap between the right-hand drive of the old model and the right-hand drive of this model coming through, which will have caused a bit of a dip there, I'm sure.
Infiniti, again, it's not massive numbers, but it's the if you look at a chart, the line is going up. It's 73% increase from 105 to 182 cars.
But I saw in their press release today that it's not just in the UK, it's across the whole of Europe. They're showing a significant... Oh, drat. I was trying to talk through it. They're showing a significant increase, so that's good news.
Yep. Jaguar, again, continuing.
And Land Rover again.
Yes, Land Rover again. Kia. Wow. This is a heck of a start to January. Up 51%. So they are now at 7,661 new car registrations as opposed to 5,000. So, Kia. What?
Well, that, you know, getting 10th in the list is definitely something to celebrate as well.
Yep.
For the Sportage. But I'm going to get slapped down quite badly for this, but Kia actually have quite a... There are a few desirable cars in the Kia range.
Well, I like the Optima Estate.
So the Optima Estate is lovely. The standard Optima I've always thought was a good-looking car.
Yeah, they've done well.
The Seed, I saw a Seed GT earlier on today and was admiring it once again.
Mm.
And stuff like the not Sportage, what's the bigger one? That's the next one up from the Sportage. There is a bigger one than the Sportage, which is...
Yes, I know the one you mean, sorry.
Yeah, which is
American-y grilly fronty.
Yeah, but it has about a 3.5-ton towing capacity, and that's the big win there. So you know, there's reasons for many different people right across the spectrum who maybe aren't car folk, you know, to really look at the Kia range and find something for them there.
Mm.
That almost sounded like an advert, and I'm really sorry. But it did. But I'd seen a bunch of Kias today, and I had about almost 3 hours of driving to do, so I had time to sort of chunter through all these things in my head before I do that. So no, I'm not surprised, and they do have quite an attractive range in there.
Yep. Mercedes up nearly 10.5%. So they've just got over 13,000 new car reg. Mini, I was surprised at Mini here.
There's the new Fuggerman.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sort of not surprised, but I think it was quite a sizable jump.
Yes.
18%. Now they're all using the new platforms and the new tech inside. They do make, okay, perhaps a little bit costly, but they do make attractive cars from a sitting in and using point of view.
Sorry, you used the word attractive cars and Mini in the same sentence there.
I quantified it quickly.
Not quickly enough.
Good news again for Seat.
Mm-hmm. Is that a Ateca effect?
Yep. 23.5 Ateca percentage.
And there's going to be the new Ibiza was launched a couple of weeks ago, so that's going to start coming on stream before long as well, and that'll be contributing.
That looks
all junior boy racers everywhere will be clamoring for that, because there's few things driven faster than the Seat Ibiza.
Mm. The final one that I selected was Suzuki, with just a smidgen under 60% increase to 3,762 new car registrations.
Most of that must go down to the Ignis, which is such a cutie. I've seen a few on the roads now.
They've been sold now.
Yeah. Okay. And you just see
them. I haven't seen any up here yet. And I've got there's a Suzuki garage not far from me. I just haven't driven that way yet.
I was past Perth the other day, which is the weekend, last Friday, I think it still has a Suzuki garage. It still has a lot of Suzukis in and around Creef for some reason, and it's. I saw a couple of Ignis there. It's like, oh, you're sweet. And if you want to know more and where that kind of feeling comes from, if people haven't, then read the Sniff Petrol write up on it. Sniffpetrol.com, obviously. Richard Porter writes all about his week with an Ignis, and it is kind of how you'd expect. It's. Basically, his 3-year-old loved it.
Cool.
And his wife anthropomorphized it instantly. And even the dog got in it. So, it couldn't really go too far downhill from there. It's well worth a read. Well worth a read if you haven't already. A good 10 minutes over lunchtime there, anyway.
Excellent.
But
right.
Moving on from small Japanese cars.
Yes, well, whereas Jaguar and Land Rover had a good January, February hasn't started so well for them. It is reported that they have had in the region of £3 million worth of engines taken from their plant in the Midlands. Now, mm-hmm. You may think, wow, that's a lot of money on one lorry. But no, it transpires that lorry, which was stolen, actually managed to gain entrance to the secure site twice.
Yeah.
Disappear with its cargo, which, having worked in the transport industry, and this is before I pass over to our commercial vehicle correspondent, I find it hard to believe that they could get in without somebody knowing something potentially on the inside, allegedly.
Well, one would imagine that papers have to be shown on your way into a site like the load lane one in Solihull. And also that once you've driven your trailerless tractor unit in, hitched it up to a trailer, knowing which trailers would be full and which ones wouldn't, and then driving out. Also, once again, showing your paperwork to the gate bloke on the way out before you drive it off, park up the trailer, and then people pinch all your engines. You'd think that would be quite hard. I mean, we had this trailer stolen once. But it was just the trailer. It's a load of dirt. It's not really that valuable, to be honest. It seems kind of strange.
It seems a little fishy. I hope it isn't the case, but it doesn't feel right.
No. There's something missing from this. Smarty pants. People have to have had at the very worst sort of copies and an idea of what the official paperwork and stuff looks like, and some insider stuff. I think I'm sad to see. So we'll see what happens. If there's any follow-up on that, you can bet that we'll be back with that.
Mm.
Before we move up to the middle of the show, one last story, which comes from the Cotswolds. This one has been all over the internet because I know that even Jalopnik picked it up. I know that in Bybury in Oxfordshire, a chap called Peter Maddox, who's a retired dentist, has a banana yellow Vauxhall Corsa. I think it's quite cute. It's one of the ones that looks a bit like a VXR, but isn't. It's quite a good looking little car. However, the problem here is that Mr. Maddox lives in a 17th century cottage in a part of the village, which is very, very popular with tourists who want to see perfect English villages, etc., 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 and like to take pictures and Instagrams and whatever else, and share them around the world. From Bybury. So it's near Cirencester in Gloucestershire. It was once described by William Morris as the most beautiful village in England, and it still looks incredibly pretty. Now, why am I telling you all about Bybury? Well, basically, it's because somebody has taken issue with the fact that Mr. Maddox parks his yellow car outside his own cottage in the street where he lives. And they have actually vandalized it.
Paid for with his own money.
And has paid for with his own money when they are turning up, taking some pictures and bogging off again in their coach to Bicester Village or something. Then they have actually scratched the words "move" into the paintwork of his Corsa. And
smashed in windows
Smashed windows and all sorts of stuff, because this man who lives in the village, has done for some time, had parked his car outside his house. And quite frankly, I think that whoever did that should be strung up from the historic gallows, which I'm sure must exist nearby, and hung, drawn and quartered, basically, because you just don't do that. If you don't like the look of someone's car that they've parked outside their own house, take a picture of another house.
You selfish little so-and-sos, that you're taking a photo that's probably going to be blurry on your iPhone or your Android device, that isn't going up, that you're not selling, that isn't going up to some competition, that no one will probably ever see again anyway. Just go away. You add nothing. You
into
are
the
an
sea.
Oxygen taker.
Yep. Just unbelievable that people would do that. I just don't get how or why people would do that anywhere.
Because they're scumbags.
Yeah, I think that's it. Shall we move on from that depressing little story there?
Yes. Nice.
A bit nicer.
A lot nicer, actually.
A lot nicer. In fact, it's wonderful, because it's time for a word from our sponsor. Yes, it's the This Is An Advert spot, all of which is capitalized. And once again this week, we're going to tell you all about the joys of Audible. So Audible is the audiobook service from Amazon. And Amazon is offering you a 30-day free trial of their one book monthly membership. During the trial, you'll receive one free monthly credit to be applied to any of the over 200,000 titles in their store, and will receive all the benefits of being a member for those 30 days. You may cancel at any time during the trial period, and if you do cancel, the audiobook remains yours to keep. When the 30-day trial period ends, memberships will automatically renew at Audible's full rate of £7.99 a month, which in itself is a huge saving over purchasing even a single audiobook. To try Audible for yourself, go to motoringpodcast.com/support and click on the Audible graphic to subscribe via Amazon. This week, Andrew, what do we have as a recommendation for people to get started on Audible?
Well, again, like last week, it's another book that we have discussed on the show. Mm-hmm. And this time it is Richard Hammond's biography, On the Edge, which covers his career up to the point where he had the accident and then his recovery from the accident. And you warned me before I listened to it that I may have moments where there was potentially something in my eye.
Yes, it's very...
His wife, actually, they both are the narrators for this, and she reads the bits that she has written, and wow, it's powerful.
Yeah,
it's incredibly, incredibly powerful and moving book. And I thoroughly enjoyed it and recommend it to anyone if you've got a passing interest in old New Top Gear and Richard Hammond, that sort of thing. But also on the process of someone recovering from a serious injury.
Yeah. No, it's really good. The power, I think, of some of the Audible books is actually in the narrator. And sometimes you can find that if it's the author's reading it, that can actually make it far more powerful than otherwise. One of the things, even before you even try this Audible thing, you can listen to a sample of what it's going to be like and listen to the narrators via Amazon. So you can actually have an idea of what it is that you're going to get, whether you like the person's voice or whatever, because there's a lot of reading in, there's a lot of listening even in some of these books. You are looking at 3, 4, 5, 6 hours of listening just there.
Yes.
So, as we said, to try Audible for yourself, go to motoringpodcast.com/support and click on the Audible graphic to subscribe via Amazon. If you're interested in promoting your product or service via the Motoring Podcast, then please do get in touch. Contact details will be at the end of the show, as usual. And just because we've had a quick advertising spot, it doesn't mean that I'm not going to ask you to take a few moments to tell a friend about Motoring Podcast and Rear View, and to leave a star rating and review for us via the podcast playing platform of your choice. The most popular and powerful podcasting platform of all is iTunes, so a 5-star rating that on there is hugely influential. But other podcast apps such as Stitcher, Pocket Cast, Downcast, Overcast and the like, a rating still means a lot, so thank you very, very much. Right, that's enough shilling for advertising money. Let's move on.
Yes, bit of news. We all will be aware that the average cost of insurance is rising. Now, there are two factors for this that are being thrown around at the moment. One is that George Osborne, in one of the last things he did as Chancellor, decided to stick a extra tax onto insurance, which meant obviously the lovely people at insurance companies could not stomach that themselves. They had to pass that on to the consumer, and I don't understand how anybody thought it would be different. So obviously they knew what they were doing. So it was another form of raising revenue for the government in a way that cannot be avoided, as you pointed out at the time, Alan.
Yes.
But the other issue is that as cars have become more complex, therefore it has to happen that they are more costly to fix. So in the last 3 months of 2016, it says in this Car Keys article, which will be in the show notes, that the average annual insurance policy costs $462. Now, they are saying that the cost of fixing cars has gone up, which I did have somewhere, but I cannot find now, which is all really incredibly professional.
I saw it a moment ago. It's risen by 32% in the past 3 years, actually.
That's it. Thank you.
Yes.
Yes. So, obviously, a business cannot absorb... Well, should not be able to absorb 32% and still make a healthy profit. So therefore, this gang gets passed on to us. So, it's... the new tinfoil, or the tinfoil hat that you did leave with me...
Yes, I did.
...is...
Finally.
Is itching to be deployed.
Part of this was all about the amount of tech in the car is driving up the cost, as well as all the extra taxation. And you can understand how that is, because much of the sort of new technology that's appearing in vehicles, So, for example, if your car has radar cruise control, for example, then that radar has to be at the front of your car. And the thing is that if something's at the front of your car, then if you crash your car into anything, then it's going to be one of the first things that gets smashed and damaged and probably needs to be replaced.
Mm.
So that kind of thing really is helping to push it up. And that's actually just dawned on me, actually, that's one of the reasons why camera-based systems are probably quite a good idea, because they do move stuff from being in the grill and in the front bumper up to being much further.
Yeah, but you've still got your parking sensors, and then you're still going to have radar down there as well as your camera things. I mean, because that seems to be what's agreed by most in the industry, that it is going to be a combination of technology that will provide, will enable the fully autonomous vehicle or the cars to be at their fully sensed and at the best, to give them the best chance of sensing any change in the environment that may impact on it. So you're going to have radar, LIDAR. Is it LIDAR or LIDAR?
LIDAR, yes.
Yeah, LIDAR. Then you're going to have the camera systems. I've heard talks of infrared waves as well, and all sorts of stuff, because as we've seen, there are limitations for each of them. Mm-hmm. So it's trying to use the broad brush that between them, they'll cross overlap enough so that there isn't any blank areas.
Yeah, it's trying to have as much of that Venn diagram filled in as possible, yes. Really.
Yeah.
Try and get all those outliers as well, because it's the outliers that cause the accident.
Yep. So,
That was a happy one. So let's move on to a proper happy one, which is that Euro NCAP has celebrated 20 years of crash testing recently. And it is... That alone has reduced... The outcome of those crash tests has reduced UK car occupant deaths and injuries by 63% in that time, which is quite fantastic. And as a result of that, they're claiming that actually the crash testing has helped to save over 15,000 lives across those 20 years, which is really quite impressive. On the Autocar page that there'll be a link to, there is there's an interesting comparison video between a current new Honda Jazz and a 1997 Rover 100. A Rover 100 gets one star. Would get one star in this test. The Honda Jazz is 5 stars, I believe, isn't it? Mm. I have now forgotten. I think it is. Anyway, it's particularly high there. But what it serves to do is it serves to give us an idea of just how much even small car crash testing has moved on in Europe over those last 20 years. It's worth a look, and these videos are always quite interesting in the right way or the wrong way.
Yes, we've got someone who drives a Rover 100 near me. I now need to flag them down and just show them this video.
You do.
Say, stop you it do. Now. Just go and get. Please go buy something else.
But the thing that I want to add on to this, so that's brilliant. Well done, Euro NCAP. That's been absolutely fantastic. People accused it when it started of setting unrealistic safety standards for people for vehicles, and the manufacturers were really against it. However, it does seem to have very much been embraced. And one of the nice things about it, I think we've talked about this not so long ago, is that it does keep moving the carrot along a little bit further as vehicles evolve, as they get safer and safer and safer and safer and safer. But the thing that upsets me about this, there is something that upsets me, and that's that whilst this video for Euro NCAP showed that Rover 100 getting a one-star result and just what happens, what's really quite depressing is that elsewhere in the world, vehicles that don't even get one star, new vehicles that don't even get one star, are out there and are still being sold. Cars like the Renault Kwid The initial version got 0 stars. The revised version still only gets 1 star. The Honda Mobilio, for example, both of these are sold in India, can be had with no airbags, nothing like that whatsoever. It gets 0 stars for occupant safety. It gets 1 star for people in the back safety. And the thing is, the Mobilio isn't just a tiny little hatchback thing. We are actually talking about a 7-seater sort of Renault Scenic style MPV. And that's just not good enough. So whilst people have been moving on, Euro NCAP have been moving the barrier in Europe, it is still incredibly depressing that hasn't filtered to the rest of the world yet.
But they are trying to do that, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. It's nice to see that Euro NCAP has broadened out to global NCAP, and they're trying to make the rest of the world aware of this as well. And hopefully we shall see that kind of percentage decrease in road deaths echoed across the rest of the world as well. So well done. Well done, NCAP.
Yep.
I've finished. I'll get down off my soapbox now.
No, it's quite right. It's quite right. Moving on, just as we're now firm favourites, fans of motorsport all of a sudden at the start of this year. It's just a reminder that the next round of the World Rally Championship is this week, Thursday evening UK time, from Sweden this time. And this, so that will be the only fully winterized, is that a word? Winterized event. It's going to be lots of snow. So if we remember from the Monte Carlo, there's going to be tons of confidence in M Sport, obviously, because they won. Toyota seemed to be quite buzzing, as it's that seemed literally to go as well as it could for them. And Hyundai didn't do too badly. Citroën have got some work to do. They've got a cracking looking car. Now they need to make it go. And I don't think it was helped by Chris Meek having a bit of a crash in the last test run he did. It was a very slow crash, but it was still a crash. And the car's all right, but it's just like, oh, God. So hopefully he's got it out of his system and he can have good luck this weekend as opposed to at Monte Carlo, where he had no luck.
No, none at all.
So I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be on BT Sport, and then next Monday, which date I can't remember off the top of my head, there is highlights on Channel 5 as well, if you do not have access to BT Sport.
Cool. Good old, and I'm sure we'll end up chatting about it next week.
Yes.
And this week, in a rare two stories from the same person moment, this week, you've got quite an interesting looking and finally that I haven't had a chance to do anything about yet.
Yes. Again, nearly 100 episodes in and we are pushing the boundaries of stuff we talked about. games. And this time it is a mobile game. Now, anyone who has a mobile device and has an interest in car games will know that there isn't a massive amount of choice. Obviously, you will struggle to take on the consoles, so the likes of Gran Turismo, which I repeatedly misspelt over the weekend, and Forza in their various versions. But this is called Gear Club, and it's available on iOS and on Android. And it's actually all right. I've been playing it over this weekend. And it's a case of you're pushing on certain parts of the screen for go and stop. And you steer by turning the phone or tablet left and right, up and down. And it's got various settings in it for how good you are. So you can have it fully automated and you only steer. You can have it that you're doing accelerating and it'll automatically brake and you steer. And then you've got the full manual. Not only that, but it's very similar to Gran Turismo and Forza games where you've got a garage that you can go back to. You can buy different cars, you can upgrade them, you can add bits, you can tweak settings and all this sort of stuff to get to the just so that you want. And the cars actually look pretty realistic. You can see where the game doesn't try and compete with console games, things like where there would be people talking, it's just text and, you know, a sort of cartoon cut out of a person, and that's them talking to you.
But they are but real they can, cars.
Yes, but they can only do so much on a mobile device. So, you know, you're not going to have the same processing power. But the cars look real. When you hit walls, you slow down and stop and you gain damage and you have to go and get it fixed and things like that. I really enjoyed it, actually. And it's one that you can just dip in for a race, or you can spend quite a bit of time.
And so, just to make it clear, it's free, but it offers in-app purchases as well.
Yes, free in-app purchases. There are things where you can gain more experience points and rewards if you, say, watch an advert, or if you connect your Facebook account, if you have one of those, to it and log in with that and, you know, put messages on Facebook. Oh, I've just done this round of races on here, and then you can get more coins or whatever. But I think it's good fun. I'm enjoying it. I think I will stick with it for a while.
Good. Cool. And a new version just came out about a month ago. So it's being updated all the time as well. So it should be improving and getting better. Interesting. Because I've never even bothered looking for driving games on my phone and my iPad.
I think it's Real Racing 3 is the only other one that's remotely realistic.
Okay. Cool. Well, at least it vaguely lives up to its name anyway.
Yes.
No, fantastic. Oh, that's an interesting one. Cool. Well, I think that rounds us up for this week, really.
Yep.
Got a lot of stuff covered. Given we were worried it was going to be a zero news week, we seem to have dug some stuff out from the corners of the internet. But don't forget, everyone, that between now and next week, you can give us any feedback and share your thoughts with the show at Motoring Podcast on Twitter and Instagram, on Facebook, and on the contact page of motoringpodcast.com, the hub of all our activities. Remember our Audible offer, available at motoringpodcast.com/support, and please leave a review and rating on iTunes or however your podcast app lets you do such a thing. It really, really does matter. Andrew, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
The best way would be via Twitter, or if you search for Crack Windscreen, you will find me. And what's the best way if people want to get in touch with you, Alan?
As ever, it's Twitter once again, where I'm at AJPBradley, B-R-A-D-L-E-Y. We'll be back next week. I think we're recording next Monday. But until then, I've been Alan Bradley.
I've been Andrew Clues.
And safe motoring.